Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp. Ben, still in studio, part two of the preview. How you feeling?
I'm only gaining momentum.
Yeah?
I'm getting and more hot in my hot takes.
Good.
You guys just all ganged up on me during the break, though. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, you did. Ben just refused to go to dinner, saying that you don't like going to dinner, which is a really weird life stance. So we're ordering pizza instead.
Are we really doing that just because of me?
Yeah.
Oh, now I feel
Diva.
Bad.
Diva Golliver.
Well, in my own defense, you have like 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 dudes, right?
This is just like a bad look for you. Like, it's just like hating on the act of going to dinner and socializing is going to be a tough sell.
I'm going to admit to some hermit tendencies in general.
Uh-huh.
But I'm just saying, like, it could take 2 or 3 hours. Do we all need to sit around and eat that slowly, or can we just eat more efficiently and go do something else we want to do besides like sitting up with good posture and using napkins and like, you know, asking each other small talk about each other's days? And
I like, you know, that's why I like going to dinner, though. You're less inclined to like actually talk to people unless you're forced to in a public setting.
But why would you ever want to be forced?
Like if you give me a piece of a pizza,
yeah,
I'll grab 2 slices, hang out for 5 minutes and then bounce. We're going to do that tonight.
That sounds freaking perfect.
I know, but that doesn't foster bonding, okay? This is how humans interact. I'm just trying to help you out here.
The only thing we need less right now than bonding is nothing, because we've been in the studio for like hours together.
We are
fully bonded. We have a covalent bond.
We're good. So, all right, let's talk Western Conference. I'm feeling revitalized. The office has a surplus of Clif Bars. So I just had a hot chocolate Clif Bar, and it was incredible. Let's dive right into the West. Starting with the Lakers, America's team. Will the Lakers keep their top three protected pick?
Yes, I think they actually will. I think number one, the main reason why they're going to finish so poorly in the standings is their defense is going to be a train wreck. I think you bring in a couple of veterans with Mozgov and Deng. Those guys are definitely upgrades, but that's not enough to construct anything besides the NBA's worst defense. When you have the number of young players and sort of one-way guys that they've got, I think Luke Walton could scream himself red in the face, which he would never do because he's got this sort of surfer
vibe. It's not his
vibe,
yeah.
But even
you don't think they can get 30 wins?
I mean, one thing I would say about the league this year is I don't think there's as many teams that are just like god awful as there were last year.
Yeah.
Maybe injuries will factor in and kind of change that equation, but I think that it will be easier for them to be a bottom three team this year, even with Brooklyn out there, even potentially with Miami tanking, even with Philadelphia. I mean, I think, you know, they're going to be pretty easily in that mix, and I don't see them getting above 25. I mean, the defense is going to hold them back. But I think they're going to be a lot more fun to watch. I think that's the main thing.
I have not watched a full Lakers game so far this preseason, but I am all about D'Angelo Russell highlights.
He's getting a lot of buzz.
Who would you compare him to?
I like the sort of like skinny anorexic Harden comp, just for his offensive game. Maybe that's not something you can say out loud, but I think it's a combination of scoring and playmaking is what he brings to the table. And there aren't a ton of guys who kind of do it in that same way. I would love for him to get that sort of knockdown step back three that Harden's got, because that just changes how defenses have to play you. Generally, when you have attack minded guys like that, they're always going downhill. So they got defenders back on their knees or back on their feet or heels. And I think that's why with Harden, he always has that counter of just stepping back and hitting that, you know, short porch three. And now all of a sudden, you know, you're very, very difficult to guard. I think Russell can get there eventually. I'm not sure it's going to happen this year, but he is in such a better position to succeed this year compared to last year. I think everyone would agree about that. Better coach, no Kobe, fewer distractions, much greater responsibility.
Eternal green light, since the Lakers aren't really playing for anything.
Exactly right. And that's a huge part of it, too. He's the kind of guy where he checks out quick if he's not a centerpiece.
That's probably true.
And I think he's going to rise up to the responsibility of being a main guy.
Yeah, I've thought about the comparison. I had a scout describe him as a rich man's CJ McCollum, a poor man's Steph Curry, and kind of he can't totally repeat what he said, but he said he's got a similar outlook on life to James Harden. Like he's kind of kind of into some of the bullshit, but is also like a basketball genius at the same time. So you like enjoy him.
His feel is great.
Yeah.
That's kind of why he reminds me of Harden. That and the combination of the passing, natural like, passing skills plus the scoring instincts.
I will say that I love him because he's so much fun to watch. I totally understand by people who find him kind of annoying in like an Odell Beckham kind of way, which is fine, but I'm just really excited to watch him like actually have like a full year. And then the Lakers, I think they're going to be just good enough to lose their pick. And I think that it's not going to matter because the progress of D'Angelo and Clarkson and Ingram will be encouraging enough so that people are like, you know what? We're fine.
Can't say I agree on that.
Okay.
I think that Clarkson, you know, he is going to be kind of a smaller role type guy on a good team. The scout, our preseason magazine scout basically said that if he's playing on a playoff team, he's at best your third guard. And, you know,
third guard, he's really good as a third guard.
I don't know. I mean, I think he's a liability defensively. I don't think he's a great scorer. I think he's a good scorer. I think he's a fine player. I just don't think he's going to be the guy at the end of the year who you're really getting excited about as part of this amazing core. You know, it kind of reminds me of a little bit is like a Zach LaVine in Minnesota, where their core is clearly Towns and Wiggins and now Dunn. And we throw LaVine in.
LaVine got the courtesy inclusion.
We kind of throw him in because it sounds cooler to have like four young guys. But in reality, when you look at the Lakers, the core right now, to me, it's Russell and it's Ingram. And everybody else is like, I'd almost put Nance in the core before I'd even put a guy like Randall in the core.
Yeah.
So, and I think Ingram is so young and just physically not quite there yet, where he's going to have a nice rookie season, but he's not going to blow people's minds.
No, my thing with Ingram is I think he'll have enough moments where people see like what he'll be.
Yeah.
That at the end of the year, they're like, you know what? If we came away from two drafts with one Brandon Ingram, like that's all right. We're set.
But imagine having another top three pick. Now it gets interesting.
The reason the top three pick would get interesting is that then they can turn that around and sort
into Paul George, DeMarcus Cousins. All that stuff we heard last summer, do it again.
Yeah. Adding Boogie to LA would be fun.
Would be great.
All right. Next team. Suns, are you going to publicly apologize for your Devin Booker disrespect in the SA Top 100?
You know, you're dwelling on this. This is why I don't like to go to dinner, because it's a great opportunity. Like, you're hostage, right? Like, socially, you're
dropping
just,
35 look, in the preseason.
If you're at dinner with people, you can't just get up from the table and walk away, because number one, you got to pay the bill. Number two, there's all these societal norms about just not bailing on people. But look, you're really dwelling on the Devin Booker thing. And if this was dinner, I think I would probably leave. Here's my thing. I like Devin Booker. In fact, I love Devin Booker's potential. How often do we see guys his age, 19, 20, be big-time elite wings in the NBA? That's my question. We don't see it very often.
Ray Allen part two, basically. He's not going to play defense. Ray Allen didn't really play defense. And it didn't matter because he's just that smooth and that good.
Is that a retroactive take because of how well the rest of his career played out, though?
What do you mean?
I'm saying like Ray Allen at 25, Ray Allen at 27, amazing player, all-star level player. But Ray Allen at 20... what kind of a player was he, you know, this season? That's kind of my question with Booker is I think he can take a big step forward from last year, but I don't think he was nearly as valuable overall as people are remembering from last season, because people a lot of times don't look at defense and they don't look at his shooting numbers. I mean, his shooting numbers weren't great. I think he's going to be set up for success. I actually loved Earl Watson's decision to take Brandon Knight and make him the sixth man. I didn't see that coming. I thought he was going to play to the contracts and let those guys start and start Knight and Bledsoe. So I think it was a better move for them to just say, hey, let's showcase Booker and roll with it. But I think there's going to be enough learning pains here in year two where he's going to show more than a few flashes. But what is his overall total impact and positive value? That's my question.
My other son's question is, what would you do with Eric Bledsoe?
I think Eric Bledsoe is one of the most confounding players in the league. I'd put him right there with like Danilo Gallinari.
Uh-huh.
How many games are these guys ever going to play? Do you trust that a guy who's missed significant time multiple seasons in a row is ever going to be able to get out of that rut?
Right.
It's almost like a Derrick Rose type thing with him, right? I mean, he's missed a lot of time. If he does again this season, then you pretty much have to kind of cut bait. At the same time, he's still so young, you feel like, well, maybe you could talk yourself into him
playing.
And
when he plays, he's really effective.
All-star, I think all-star candidate snub type.
Like, I think a lot of times some of the other injury-prone guys are, like, Derrick Rose, through the injuries, was really slowing down and was not fun to watch and was not fun to play with. Bledsoe, I think, is a little bit of a different story. Like, he could still be really effective and is great on defense, which a lot of the best guards are not. Yeah. But I'm just not sure how he fits with the timeline of the rest of the roster. And in that case, I don't know, like, point guard, I'd love to see him go to Detroit, but point guard is not a need around the league.
Yeah, so to me, I think that he makes sense for them right now to have a season because he pairs really nicely with Booker. You know, he can do the drive and kick thing, setting Booker up for shooting opportunities. He doesn't play as well off the ball, but like if Booker's operating one-on-one and then he gets into a situation where maybe the defense collapses and you pitch it to Bledsoe, all of a sudden Bledsoe can really attack the weak side of a defense pretty well. Then defensively, what's and Booker are never going to be able to do? Well, a guard, the other team's best guard, right? Yeah. Bledsoe's got that locked down. So I think as a pairing, those guys work really well. Also, Phoenix is like, they've got the young team, but they've also got an old group of guys too. Like they're almost like a weird mix and mishmash, right?
Yeah.
So they got Tyson Chandler, they got PJ Tucker, they've got Jared Dudley, they've got Barbosa.
What I described it as was a team, they're like half their team would look great if it were 2010 and the other half will look great in 2020.
I love it.
But they're kind of stuck right now.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think, but you can kind of make that work, right? Like if you lean more heavily on the vets and guys stay healthy, that could be a team that exceeds very low expectations. And actually in one of the posts I wrote kind of during the preseason about over-unders, I think that of the teams that have the potential to really go over their line this year, you got to put them in that mix. Just because Bledsoe and Knight both missed tons of time last year. Chandler had a terrible season and they had so many guys mentally checked out.
Right.
That should be fixed this year. At the same time, you got Earl Watson and a lot of young guys like Chris and Bender who are probably going to get some developmental minutes. That doesn't sound like a real recipe for success. I understand that. But look, if you can kind of stay competitive early with those veterans, you're just going to keep riding those guys and say, look, you know, Bender, congratulations, you're 14 years old. You got more years to develop after this. We're not too worried about making you a priority.
Yeah. Didn't Markieff Morris at one point attack Archie Goodwin? Well, was Archie Goodwin attacking Markieff Morris?
Yeah.
Either way, it was
There was choking. There was choking involved.
Was there?
There was. Okay. And there was also a towel thrown at Hornacek.
That, I remembered a towel being thrown. I wasn't sure if that was the same incident. Great year.
You know, I was actually at what I would consider their rock bottom last year was this atrocious loss to the Lakers where I want to say they scored like 3 points in the first half. I mean, it was like one of those games.
And that
where
was
like,
not a good Lakers team.
No, it was a terrible Lakers team. And in the locker room afterwards, Markieff Morris, who had mysteriously been a late scratch and not played, gave an extended interview where I was just basically, I'll admit, I was just kind of trolling him. And like, you know, where do you stand and whatever. And it was so clear that he would have rather been in any other situation than what he was in at that point. And sure enough, he was finally traded a little bit later. Coach was gone not too long after that. So my point here is they needed some serious house cleaning last year. They got that house cleaning. So what does it look like? It can't look worse than it did last year.
Yeah. I don't know how much. I think Devin Booker Vines will sustain Suns fans and or NBA observers. I think that's as much Suns as we're going to get.
I need one quick question for you, though, because I know you're Booker's biggest fan, BFF. Why are you so low on their team outlook if you expect such big things from him?
Because I think the rest of their roster, again, there are pieces that will make a lot of sense in a couple years. And then like Tyson Chandler, not a lot left there. Barbosa. I'm not huge on Alex Len. And so I just think they're kind of in a in-between year and they'll have one more crack at the lottery where they will probably draft like a excellent point guard. And then you're really going to have a foundation that's like wolves of the desert.
Yeah, the scout.
Coyotes.
The preview scout, when asked about Alex Len, said he's 7'1" and shoots 42%.
Yeah,
that was the direct quote.
Yeah, so I'm not sold on what's happening in Phoenix this year. Let's talk Sacramento Kings. Why didn't Dave Yeager just take a year off and do the Tibbs world tour and then come back and have his choice of jobs?
Well, if I'm Dave Yeager and I've been in all of these power struggles for years over the future of the Grizzlies and publicly griping about not getting Rodney Hood and, you know, kind of having a weird takeover from Lionel Hollins, and then also the regular flirtations with Minnesota, and he doesn't take those jobs. And clearly he's kind of a guy who wants a little bit more, right?
He just wants some stability, right?
So I look at Sacramento and I think this GM could be gone tomorrow. I mean, this guy's terrible, doesn't know what he's doing. This owner could probably be talked into just about anything. I mean, I think you could sell this guy a bridge.
Yeah.
You
know?
You could sell him Swampland in Florida, like that one movie, Glengarry,
Glen
Ross.
Did you read his interview with Sam Amick?
Oh, couldn't miss it. Great interview.
I didn't get into it because I just don't really have much energy left for.
Well, what were
the highlights?
The big takeaway was, oh yeah, George Karl was trying to trade DeMarcus Cousins for that entire summer.
That's
direct quote.
I'm pretty sure that's fact.
No, it was a fact, but he put it, the owner put it on record. Yeah. So thanks. Like, yeah, that was great. And by the way, DeMarcus Cousins is still on your team. And he's still your most important player, and the season starts in like three days.
George Karl, side note, something I found around the office yesterday was a copy of the galley for his book, Furious George, his autobiography. And I turned the first chapter I turned to was the first sentence was, I coached a game drunk once.
Oh boy.
I was like, I'm in.
You're like, once?
Take me on a journey, George.
Don Nelson's like, yeah, I got 1,000 career wins drunk.
Yeah.
But back to my point on Yeager. I think he looked at the Kings as a serious opportunity. Is it out of the realm of possibility in 2 years? He's a coach GM there?
I guess. I just think he needs a life coach. And like he could have had his pick, could have been in Chicago next year, could have been anywhere in the league, really. Could have taken over the Pelicans if things don't go well for Gentry.
I think he sold at the right time in Memphis.
He definitely, I don't blame him for, I think, was he fired in Memphis?
Yeah, I mean, he's just out. I'm just saying, like, timeline-wise, he's out at the right time for that Memphis sort of cycle.
Maybe, because
they're only headed down. And with Sacramento, if they do trade Cousins, all of a sudden the expectations are zero.
Yeah.
That's a good place to be. And if you can't be the Cousins
Whisperer.
Is it
though? Is Sacramento ever a good place to be?
This guy's coming from the D League. So it's better than Sioux Falls and Rapids, you know, and Rapids and Grand Rapids and Grand Forks and Grand Junction and all the other grands that are out there.
I would not want to deal with Vivek every day. And Boogie, I think will be fine somewhere else.
Yeah.
I just don't see it ending well in Sacramento. And the other thing we've been on this track for 3 years with Boogie. I'm sick of talking about DeMarcus Cousins with the Kings. Like, just everyone, it's been clear to everyone that it's probably not going to work.
Here's a stat that I dug up. Since DeMarcus Cousins came into the NBA, he has lost, and he's appeared, actually, not just his team has lost, but he's appeared in more losses with one franchise than every other player in the league. And it's not even that close.
Yeah. Well, that's not terribly shocking. Yes. I'm sure Ben McLemore's got to be hot on his tail on that list.
Pretty depressing, though.
If Ben McLemore still exists.
I mean, you got to give Cousins some credit for his patience.
Yeah.
I mean,
I guess.
Sort of.
I don't know.
In a weird way.
Yeah. I would be pretty fired up to see Boogie somewhere else, not fired up to do the whole, like, how much blame does he deserve? Like, is Boogie going to make the All-Star game anyways? Like, he deserves it. He's like, let's just move on.
This is the single worst roster construction in the league, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
In terms of positional balance. I mean, Darren Collison.
They've got like four centers.
They've got like 9 centers. They've got like 14 combo forwards.
Bledsoe would be a nice fit in Sacramento also.
Yeah.
Former college teammates. I would be willing to buy into the Kings more if they, like you said, if they made any sense on paper.
What about a Brandon Knight?
Yeah, that works too.
Yeah, I could see a trade there. I mean, that seems to be a situation where you've got too many guards. I mean, can we talk about a fetish? Phoenix has Tyler Ulis, Brandon Knight, Eric Bledsoe, and Devin Booker. It's like, if you're 6'6 or shorter and you went to Kentucky, just guarantee you're going to go to the Phoenix Suns. I mean, the guy just collects them like baseball cards. It's ridiculous. But meanwhile, over here in Sacramento, you've got Tolliver, Caspi, Matt Barnes, Rudy Gay. mean, these are all guys whose best NBA position is probably four, right?
Right.
But you've also got like nine centers you have to play at power forward because you already had
Cousins. I think Scal is going to be good. Scal Abissier.
By far the best combination on paper is Scal in 3 years plus Cousins.
Right.
But now you have to wait 3 years.
I don't know if they're in a position. All right. So Nuggets, they're over under for the year. 36.5. First of all, I like them to beat that number. I want to pick them for the playoffs.
Don't do it.
I really do, man.
Don't do that.
They're kind of like the Blazers last year. They've got some pieces.
The Nuggets have some incredible names. Like if you go up and down the roster, the names of their players, they got great names. Emmanuel Mudiay, Nikola Jokic. I mean, this has got some great names. They don't have a lot of talent, though.
Yeah, Jokic is really, really good, though.
He's really good, but how many minutes can he really
Nurkic
play?
Nurkic will straight up body people.
I don't think Nurkic is very good.
I do. I think he's Denver's probably a tough situation.
He's another 7-footer shooting 42%.
Yeah, but he's also like racking up kills every night. He'll concuss you, so it doesn't really matter what his shooting numbers are.
I think another one of these no D5s is Fareed, though. I think, you know, Kenneth Fareed, like he has the offensive game of a center because he can't shoot outside of what, 5 feet?
Yeah.
And he's got no defense. What is his defensive position? He doesn't guard anybody. So now you probably have to move him to the bench, but his contract and his age says that's a really tough thing to do. So I think value-wise, he doesn't really fit there. And then now who can you get to buy in on him? As a trade piece, and like, what can you get back?
Wilson Chandler, very solid.
Yeah, plays about
Will Barton.
Well, Wilson Chandler plays about 14 games a year, and Will Barton was actually you know those fake websites that put out trade rumors during the offseason to get clicks? It's like International News Daily. So Will Barton had a tweet that was thanking International News Daily or whatever that website was for including him as one of the top trade targets around the league.
Great. That's not
always a good sign.
Well, here's my Nuggets. And
here's my other problem, though. Gary Harris is injured, you know? They needed Gary Harris, another guy who has to play like 36 minutes for them, you know? Yeah,
and it's not, honestly, it's not a great sign if you ever need Gary Harris.
Bingo.
But I think there's a chance that they really get rolling and Jokic, like, jumps a level and is all-star caliber and Gallinari stays healthy. There's a way they could play where they're really fast and tough to guard. The flip side of that is that if it doesn't work out, I think then you know a lot. You know what you need to know about Emmanuel Mudiay, and there's like five great point guards in this upcoming draft.
I wouldn't write him off yet because he came in so young. I would give him at least 3 years before I wrote him off.
I would also get help, though, in case he's not the guy.
Yeah, and maybe that's why they drafted Murray. I mean, maybe they see Murray as part of that, you know?
Murray is going to be... It makes me so upset that the Pelicans took Buddy Hield over Murray.
Makes the Suns upset that they had two lottery picks and they couldn't get Murray because they're Kentucky guy. But they, like, forgot their blueprint for, like, 13 seconds
sending
there.
Sending a letter of apology to John Calipari.
But, hey, real quick on Gallo.
Yeah.
I think he is their whole season. You know, if he plays A+ Gallinari, you could talk me into them being an 8th seed.
Yeah.
Anything short of that, I don't see it.
Yeah. Other than the Pelicans, also 36.5 over under. That seems low. But then again, Anthony Davis, as of last week, this is airing on Monday, is hurt again. Like, what's the deal?
I don't know. It's something in the water down there. I hate their centers. I think the Pelican centers are probably the worst position of any team around the league. King's point guard's right there too. But you got Omer Asik.
Alexis Ajinka.
Try to talk yourself into those guys.
Yeah. You know, so we did this scout thing, whatever. I don't know if you heard this, but I had to go back to my guy because we were a little bit too negative about a couple teams. And the Pelicans were one where it was like, cool, man. Like Solomon Hill, Etuan Moore.
Yeah.
Like what's the plan? And Tyreke Evans, there's not a lot there.
Yeah. No, I kind of like the idea of guys like Etuan Moore. You know, they added a couple of point guards and I was like, oh, this is great. And they got options. If Holiday goes down, they got a guy who you can plug in every once in a while. And then it's like, oh, by the way, Holiday's just not going to play the first half of the season because of a horrible family tragedy. And it's like, oh, these are going to be their starters now?
Yeah.
Like, these are the guys they have to play 36 minutes a night? Like,
like,
I don't like it quite as much.
They're okay players. Yeah. But then at the same time, like, if the goal is to compete with, like, the better teams in the West, which, a couple, like, I think we're 4 years in with Anthony Davis, like, that should be the goal. And there's nowhere near, like, the level they need to be at.
I hate to start this now, but are we really that far away from Alvin Gentry hot seat talk?
Yeah. And I don't think it's fair because he's been stuck with a crappy roster. Is Dell Demps still in charge?
Amazing, yes.
Because there should be some Dell Demps hot seat talk.
His seat should be out the window.
Yeah. Yeah. After last year, especially.
Yeah, I don't really know what to make of them. I don't think that they're even going to crack their over. I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, can you get, you need 80 games from Anthony Davis if you're going to get to 37 wins, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's, if he plays a full year, like, they're going to get 38, 39 wins.
Yeah. I mean, if picks could fly.
You know what? I was watching highlights of him dropping 59 and 20 on the Pistons last year.
Great game. Like, love that game.
He's a freak of nature. So, hopefully he's healthy, but we're definitely at the point where I'm officially skeptical.
Yeah, I mean, that really kind of hit me when he got this most recent injury last season.
Yeah.
Where I was like, I started kind of going through the columns that I had written after each one of his injuries. So don't write him off yet. Don't write him off yet. You can only give a guy like four passes before you have to take it into account.
Well, and this year there's been a lot of people writing like, well, like, everybody's in love with Karl Anthony Towns, but have people just forgotten about Anthony Davis? And I'm like, no, I haven't forgotten at all.
He's been sitting over here
amazing.
Waiting. We've been sitting over here waiting for him to do what he does. Yeah.
I'm kind of like holding my breath, hoping that this dude is not like the Eric Gordon of big men.
You know what argument I'm sick of having?
What?
Does Anthony Davis deserve to be all NBA even though he only played 55 games? Yeah. That is the argument I never want to have to ever have again in my entire life.
I don't have a vote, but I would have voted for him just to get him paid. Because, like, screw it, whatever. Who was it? The people in front of him were not very good.
It was a weak loss.
The Mavs. So, Mavs also have some spare parts that they've added. Do you feel bad for Dirk Nowitzki?
No, because he's getting paid. I mean, he's kind of still the guy.
Yeah.
He's kind of in that Kobe zone. I mean, he's not making quite as much, but it's his show. I mean, he's not the same guy he was 5 years ago. Nobody's rushing him out the door. He hasn't been good enough. I mean, no offense to him. He's like 63 years old, but he hasn't been good enough to carry a team to the second round in years. I mean, since their title run.
I feel like he's kind of taken on this role as like a tragic figure and Dallas just like can't put a team around him.
But doesn't it start with him? Everybody's blaming Kobe when the Lakers are falling apart. Nobody's coming at Dirk.
Right.
I'm not saying we should come at Dirk, but like he can't be this tragic guy if he's getting a pass on all of us.
Yeah. Well, and it's also I think I'm not advocating that he should take more criticism because Dirk's awesome.
Yeah, Dirk's
but
great.
I also think you look back at his career, even if you tack on like a couple like underwhelming seventh and eighth seeds for the Mavs, like he's had one of the cooler careers I've ever seen. And like the one title is sure, like it would have been great if he were in a couple more finals, but that one title was so cool that like nobody should be upset about this.
I'm not sure people really are that upset. I feel like they're the kind of team that just kind of gets left by the side of the road.
Maybe you're right.
I mean, they make all these moves. They try to get into every single free agency rumor. It always feels like they're this huge disappointment because they don't land the big names. Like this year, it's Harrison Barnes is their best pick. A couple years ago, it was Chandler Parsons. I mean, these aren't guys who you're going to be like, just completely excited and overwhelmed about.
You know who I'm excited about?
Who's that?
Seth Curry.
Yeah.
Classic case of someone that Carlisle is going to make look like twice as good. And I like wherever Seth Curry signed this summer, I was going to be like, this dude's a sleeper. But like, he's just with the Mavs, he's definitely going to help them.
You know who he would really be able to help? This team without a point guard. Sacramento Kings. What a disaster.
I don't know if you can play him for 35. Like,
you don't have
he's
to play
probably
him for that
not
many,
very good on defense.
Well, they're about to play like Vivek's daughter at point guard because they got no depth.
Yeah.
They could use Seth Curry.
They could use that Suns trade. If people take nothing from this podcast. They should definitely take the Suns Kings deal. We should all lobby for that to happen. Yeah, no, I think the Mavs, they're over under is 39. I would take the over. I think they're going to sneak into the playoffs here. And then Dirk probably retires after this year.
I jumped on to the Mavericks tanking last year and it just didn't happen. It went the other way. And so I got kind of burned on that.
Well, it worked out though, because they sacrificed their pick in a bad draft.
But I thought they were going to be a lot worse than they were though. And then they wound up kind of sneaking in and doing that same old right. thing that they always do. Could that happen again this year? I could see it. Or could this be the year that the wheels fall off? I could see that too. I don't really know what to make of them. I don't think that they took any major steps forward this summer though. And I think probably the best thing that they're going to get back this year is just Wesley Matthews being another year away from that injury. I think he's probably going to have a little bit more than he did the previous season, but I don't know. To me, they're just the kind of team that you can write off as being irrelevant.
Would you rather be a Grizzlies fan or a Mavericks fan?
I'd rather be a Grizzlies fan. I mean, you got cooler players. You got a cooler core. You got a better, just, you know, more to rally around. Dallas, I don't know.
First of all, Dirk alone is much cooler than anyone Memphis has.
Zach Randolph? Tony Allen? First team all defense?
Oh, Tony Allen. Good. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I don't know. I like the Grizzlies. There's a lot of optimism. I just like if the Mavericks looked at Chandler Parsons, like Cuban and Parsons had a real bromance.
Yeah.
Like they were popping up in clubs together, spending weekends in Manhattan Beach. Like for him to let Parsons go, the knee had to be like really messed up.
No, I get it. I get what you're saying, but in terms of like ceiling.
Yeah. Well, like, ceiling, they look, if Parsons is healthy and if Conley's, I think it was a Achilles.
Yeah.
It like if all those guys are healthy, they're top four. Probably.
And that's my big problem with Dallas. There's just no ceiling to it. Everybody plays great. Dirk has another amazing year. Matthews bounces back. Harrison Barnes breaks out.
So do you think, well, okay.
What's their ceiling? Eight?
Yeah.
Their ceiling 7 or 8.
They're between 7 and 10 in the West.
And that sucks.
And then the Grizzlies, like to their credit, are between like 3 and 10.
I went to the Sloan Conference like 4 years in a row. And the only phrase I remember anybody repeating was treadmill of mediocrity. And I feel like that is the Dallas Mavericks. They are riding that treadmill of mediocrity right now.
Yeah. But they also rode a treadmill of awesome for like 10 years
for like 6 games.
So that's why
right over LeBron.
That's why I'm like, do you feel bad for Dirk? Do you feel bad for Mavs fans? Like my answer is no. They've had like a fantastic stretch. And if it's an extra 2 years of mediocrity, like they're fine.
JJ Barea had a ring before LeBron.
That's right. Yeah.
That's all you need to know.
Well, yeah, the two coolest finals of my lifetime were beating LeBron and then what LeBron did last year. So
and all of Michael Jordan's.
Yeah, I guess.
All six of Michael Jordan's were better.
Yeah. Rockets. What's your take?
It's an interesting gimmick. Like they're trying something new here. I really think that
I can't wait to watch these guys.
I think this could be 80s basketball back. And like I don't remember basically anything about the 1980s, but when you look at the stats, the games are like 140. Like the Nuggets would play games that were like 145 to 140 on a regular basis. I think that's what they're going for.
Yeah.
I think
I'm all for it.
Try it. See what happens.
Where do you see them landing?
I could see them. I think they're gonna make the playoffs, number one.
Yeah.
I just trust Harden as in this role. I think it kind of makes sense for him. I think the personalities with the coach is going to work. I think his strengths kind of go with what D'Antoni is looking for. And I think they got him just enough help where it's going to be a little bit less of a slog for him than it was last year. I also like Clint Capella. I mean, the on-off numbers last year said that they were, you know, better with him pretty much than Dwight. Transitioning into a full-time starter's role, I think that could be, you know, tricky and a little stretch for him, but I think he's more or less ready for it. And I think that there are just enough teams out there that can't keep up with firepower.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that, you know, there's going to be enough wins along the way for them where they can just, you know, rack up the points and eventually your offense gives away just enough and you can't keep up in a shootout. Now, that being said, when they play the good teams that are balanced, like the Spurs and the Warriors and so forth.
But there are only a handful of those teams around the league. They don't really, they're like five.
Yeah, yeah. No, like they're accruing credit card debt. Like they're just balling out. They're not really worried about it. And like eventually they're going to have to pay the bill in the playoffs and it's going to be bad for them.
It's the sort of thing where like, I don't live that way personally, but if I encounter someone who does, I'm like, hey, good for you.
Yeah.
Like, way to just like,
go with it.
Go for it. Yeah. You know? And I think that's where Harden and D'Antoni are going to be this year.
That's fine.
The one thing with the Rockets, I think the idea of the Rockets is great. And then like, I don't want to end up rooting for Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon for like prolonged stretches.
That sounded incredibly haterific.
I just don't think they're very good. But maybe the system is going to put them in spots where they can really like just do damage as shooters and don't have to do anything else.
I think that I don't like either one of them as players, really. I hated both of those signings. So much money, such a long-term commitment. But
again, we're racking up credit debt, whatever.
But exactly. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're mortgaging, you know, you're getting the, you're refinancing your loan, basically, yeah, when you are taking on Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon. But like you're saying, if they're going to work anywhere, it's somewhere where defense is optional and offense is everything that people care about.
So next question, why aren't you down with the Wolves? We talked about this earlier today, and you were giving me shit for talking up Kat as a MVP.
You said
Kat
was the MVP and you wanted to put Wiggins in the Hall of Fame.
Hold up. I did not say Kat was the MVP. You asked me, I don't even know what the question was, but he'll be in the mix is my point.
What's the mix? Like top 20?
Right now, I looked at the odds this morning. He's 25-1.
Okay, how much do you want to bet? I'll take your money. How much? Any amount of money.
25-1.
Any amount of money.
Let's go 50.
Okay.
50 times 25.
That's 1,000, I think.
Yeah, man. You'll owe me $1,200 when Kat wins MVP.
Hopefully no one's listening and taping this.
Yeah.
That's not how podcasts work, right?
No. So I just think that Sam Mitchell alone is getting rid of Sam Mitchell on its own is worth 5 wins.
Did I tell you where I saw Sam Mitchell this summer?
No.
Coaching high school basketball at the Adidas Nations basketball tournament.
Hold up. That's not exactly high school basketball. Adidas Nation is like the best player, like future NBA guys.
Not exactly USA basketball national team.
I guess.
I'm just saying it's a few steps down.
Yeah, but he's there as like an NBA consultant.
Was coaching in the final game. Like he was coaching.
I know, but as like he's not just like an AAU coach.
Did he make it onto a staff this year anywhere?
No, I don't. He probably wasn't looking to. I think the T-Wolves, one thing they really screwed up, I don't understand why they didn't keep him around. Like people love that guy.
Well, he did do like 9 interviews, basically hammering them for not keeping him around. So that would have been a good reason not to keep him around.
But the way he was let go was kind of shady.
It was handled poorly.
I mean, like, I don't blame him for being upset. That's why KG isn't there anymore.
Well, look, I think if you're Tibbs, clean house. It's your way.
Sure.
And that's exact same thing. Remember, Stan Van Gundy did the same thing in Detroit. Basically, everybody was gone. Training staff, all those people were let go. And you just bring in, start fresh, bring in your own people, guys you trust.
But he would have been a nice way, like, just as a connection to the past.
I don't know.
All right.
I think they're going to be okay.
We're
with
off track. Apologies for standing out for Sam Mitchell for a little bit. But bottom line is, give them a real coach. That's 5 wins. Give them Tibbs, who will just like kick ass every day. That's an extra 5 to 7 wins.
Okay, I'm going back to my Stan Van point here. Guess how many wins in year one Stan Van gave the Pistons when they were upgrading from Mo Cheeks and John Lawyer to Stan Van?
But the
three.
The Pistons sucked.
Three wins. That's all they got was 3 wins from Stan Van Gundy. And I was doing the same thing doing right now.
Wiggins is like the prototypical Tibbs wing.
I agree, but he's got a lot
Chris
of work.
Chris Dunn is going to be very solid.
You're naming very young players who are going to take steps forward, but maybe not transformational steps. That's my only argument. I'm not saying they're going to be a bust. I definitely think they're going to be a lot better than last year. But when you're trying to jump from the 20s to 500, that's a big jump. And it's not necessarily going to happen overnight. And here's another thing that, and this is sort of my like major point with them. Both Towns and Wiggins had perfect health last year, and they both played huge minutes last year. They could play more under Tibbs, especially Towns. I think he averaged like 32 minutes a night. But you're asking them to really improve their efficiency and quality of their play because they can't exactly play many, many more minutes. It's not like you're getting any better health baked into your more optimistic look, right? Guys like Rubio, Levine, I mean, they had pretty good health across the board last year from their main core guys. And a lot of those guys are coming back and they're not bringing in a lot of outside talent. So you're basically doing it with exactly the same cast. It's not like you're saying, oh yeah, we had Eric Bledsoe. He only played 30 games last year. We're going to get him for 70 games this year. So I just think that it's more likely that they take a strong step forward. You know, they go into say like 36, 37, and everybody gets really excited about the following season, as opposed to all of a sudden they're in the playoffs. They make the big leap. They win 15 more games and they're the toast of the town. I think that's what people want. That's what people want. They're really easy to root for. I want to root for Towns and Wiggins just like everybody else because they're amazing young talents, but they're still very, very young.
Okay. Let me ask you something. If they get a 4 seed in the West.
Uh-huh. I'll give you 50-1 on the 4 seed.
No. Okay. But if they did, would you say Towns belongs in the MVP conversation? Say he averages 26 and 12. And they're a 4 seed.
If Draymond Green grows 2 extra arms and therefore blocks 14 shots per game, I think he's going to be the defensive player. I mean, these are just insane scenarios.
It's not insane.
This is an insane
scenario.
Look
across the West. There's not a whole lot of like elite talent. Like there just
isn't. I promise
you. This isn't the same West.
I promise you, San Antonio.
The Blazers are like smoke and mirrors. The Thunder straight up suck.
Wow. Here it comes.
No. I'm just saying, like, if
here it's pouring
if
out
you
now.
Wanna, if you want to look, take an honest look at teams that can really like hang at the highest level, there's not that many there. And if Towns is as good as people think he is, at least I think he is, like that's a weapon that almost no one else in the West has.
I agree. I mean, he's a prototype.
The Spurs will win their token 57 games.
They're probably going to win 60.
The Clips will win 55.
Yeah.
But then like the 4 is wide open for anyone. And we're going to get to some of these guys.
Here's what I would say. If I'm going to compare up and coming teams, who's going to have a better shot at the 4 seed? I look at Utah versus Minnesota. I look at Utah, depth at all 5 positions, added playoff experience, multiple ball handlers.
Yeah.
Defensive player of the year type guys in the middle. Increased versatility lineup wise, they can play big. Now they can play small.
And they will also, Utah will have their act together every night, which is not necessarily the case with the Wolves. Let me say this though. If you put Utah against the Wolves in a playoff series, I would probably take the Wolves.
I would take Utah in 4.
In 4?
Yeah.
Get out of here. God, we're going to have to cancel the second half of this podcast. All right, yeah, the next on the list. Who finishes higher, Blazers or Jazz?
That is a tough one you can go around in circles on. I mean, the Hayward injury has me spooked, I'm not going to lie, because I'm like the Jazz number one fan in terms of standing out for them.
Yeah.
But right off the bat, it's like, oh, hey, we're going to have zero respite from the injury issues that happened last year, and we're just going to take away your most important wing, and you know it's going to be kind of an extended thing that bleeds over into the regular season. That's not an ideal start. At the same time, I really think when you look 1 to 10, 1 to 11, they've got more depth than just about anybody in the league. I mean, there's a couple other teams that have probably preferable depth, but they're right there. I think you could also say the same thing about Portland. I mean, they spent a ton, you know, just outrageous amount of money this year, but they do have guys at all 5 spots. They can play big, they can play small as well. So I think they're actually both well-suited for the long haul. You know, do you trust Damian Lillard more than anyone on the Jazz roster to be a big impact guy? I do.
Yeah.
So I think
I also think Turner will help them.
Okay, give me the argument on Turner because
basically they're gonna need someone like he can handle the ball, and CJ McCollum and Lillard are both great off ball, and they can stagger those guys and play Turner 30 minutes a game, and it's a solid mix to keep everybody healthy, and they like. That their offense is going to be from the outside in because of the way their team is built. And I just feel like he's like, over the summer when he signed that deal, I was like, I don't know if this is such a great idea. But now it starts to make a lot more sense. The thing that I don't understand is, and granted, it's better to keep Crabbe than lose him for nothing, but like that would be the investment that probably is not going to make sense long term.
It's not that I necessarily think people should be honing in on the Turner fit. It's that they have so many different rotation questions now. How do you fit Turner in? How do you balance Crabbe and Harkless and Turner at that three spot? How do you balance the ball handling between Lillard, McCollum, and Turner? How do you handle the minutes in your front court when you've got Myers, Leonard, Plumlee, Festus when he's healthy, Ed Davis? I didn't even mention Noah Vonleh, who was a big priority for them last year. Is Aminu the four, or do any of these other bigs have to kind of slide over and play the four? You know, Terry Stotts has been through a lot of different chapters in Portland. You know, he started off trying to keep LaMarcus happy, go with the young point guard and Damian. Then he had to kind of transition away from LaMarcus Aldridge after he left. Then he tries to put the pieces together last year. But I think this season probably is going to be the toughest year for him just because they've got so many guys who want to play, so many guys who got paid, and he's going to have to find the best combinations from those groups, and somebody's going to have to sit. I mean, he can't play as many guys as he's got on his roster. So maybe that they're going to be a team that tries to do a consolidation trade. But I think people pick on Turner because he's the most well-known of those guys. It's a lot easier to pick on Turner than like Mo Harkless.
Right. Or Alan Crabbe.
Yeah. But you know, there are rotation questions all throughout all those guys that I mentioned. At the same time, it's better to have more talent than less talent, right?
Yeah.
And I think actually both Portland and Utah are going to be strongly in the mix for home court.
I'm still upset that you said that the Wolves wouldn't even get a game on the Jazz.
Well, when was the last time they made the playoffs? Like 2006?
This is a whole new era. I think my problem is I legitimately look at Tibbs as like a magical creature.
Yeah.
Who is really going to change things. So maybe I'm off.
No, I am struggling with Stan Van Gundy. I have SVG PTSD because I did exactly what you're doing with Tibbs, where I'm just saying, look, give them an extra 10 games.
For the record, I'm not seriously predicting them as a four seed, but like I do think he's going to be worth like 12 wins.
Okay, so let's say
that plus Wiggins. Oh. Wiggins will be so much better that at 10, and then Towns will have a natural progression. Like they're in good shape.
I think Wiggins has farther to go than a lot of people think. Especially because he's been in a situation where he can have every shot he wants because there's just been no structure there, right? So now you're going to probably take away a little bit of his scoring this year, just his volume scoring, but you're going to have to find, you know, better ways for him to contribute. He's not a very good rebounder for a guy with his athletic gifts. He's not a playmaker for others at all. He's very good at getting the free throw line. You like that. Defensively, he comes into the NBA hyped as a plus defender. He hasn't gotten there yet. So there's a lot of avenues for him to improve. He seems like he's got the attitude to do it. I'm a huge believer in Andrew Wiggins, but I need to see some progress here.
Okay. All right. We have four more teams. Thunder. Their over-under is 45.5 wins. My question, is Russell Westbrook on this team next year?
Why don't you tell me your answer?
I'm genuinely curious as to what you think. My answer is yes, and then he'll get traded at the deadline next year.
I think he's going to stick it out. I'm in on the Russell Westbrook.
Really?
Well, look, he's got Michael Jordan inducting him into the Oklahoma Hall of Fame. So if that doesn't tell you that he is committed for life to the Thunder.
I guess,
I think
Oklahoma Hall of Fame could get really depressing if Russ leaves.
It's already
because they already did the KD dog and pony show. Like, I don't know, man.
Yeah, it's pretty awkward. Do you think like
the Hall of Sadness,
like the KD exhibit probably has like the sign from his restaurant that got closed down over the summer. And everyone's like, whoa, that's cool. That sign looks really realistic. It's awesome. Like, no, that is the sign to the restaurant because it doesn't exist anymore.
But by the way, I think they gave that restaurant to some. I think it might be Enes Kanter's now. I'll look it up. Let's see. But yeah. So what do you think of the Thunder?
I think number one, I'd pound the under on the Thunder.
Yeah.
And I think number two, I believe in Westbrook there long-term. I think that makes sense. I think that there's just so many other ways that they could try to retool the roster around him. And in typical Presti fashion, it's just been all about the flexibility, right? I mean, and I think if your core is Westbrook, Oladipo, and Adams, and Roberson, if you want to throw him in there too, I think he's that pretty nice long-term piece for them. That's the start, you know, and everybody else is sort of playing for their spot. But they're not overly committed. I don't think Westbrook's in a real big hurry. In a way, he kind of reminds me of Carmelo Anthony, where I'm not sure that the championship, like do everything you possibly can to get into a championship situation, is necessarily his only priority.
Yeah.
I think obviously he's very competitive. He would prefer to be on a contender, but I think he's willing to kind of wait on it with them. And so if that's the case, then fine.
Yeah, no, that's fair. For the record, KD's is now the Legacy Grill in Oklahoma City. So visit that if you're in the area.
Legacy by
looking
Enos.
To feel sad. But yeah.
Have you ever been there?
I have not.
I've walked by KD's. It was a couple years ago, line out the door.
Well, hey, Legacy Grill. Hopefully they bounce back. I think I could totally see that being Russ's approach. And I feel like we're now piling on. Like there was like a wave of people who were really bought into the Thunder and like excited to root for Russ. And now it feels like the most popular opinion is to sort of short the Thunder.
Yeah.
And that makes me happy because I don't want, like, I just would rather enjoy this Thunder season rather than like hate on them the all year. So like, starting now, the expectations are back to where they should be, which is like they're going to be on the playoff fringe and let's see what they can do. But the idea that Russ and Oladipo were somehow going to lead like a fourth seed, that's just not
going to happen. I don't see that. I mean, they're not protected against injury at all. If Westbrook goes down for any amount of time, they're in big trouble. And then defensively, I think they're going to be bad. I mean, I don't see any way they're really good given who they're going to have playing like the 3s and 4 minutes for them. Unless they go super small, you know, put Roberson out there as a power forward or something like that. Like, I don't know how they even really get by. So I think, you know, lack of depth, no defense, that's kind of a losing formula in the West. And I do think what you're talking about with the expectations, though, on the Thunder is people were excited for how fun it would be to watch Russ, not how successful he would be, right?
Right. And I think there are some people who misunderstood that.
Yeah.
And like, I'm excited to watch him go for like 35, 15, 40% shooting. Like, it'll be fun, but
doesn't necessarily
expecting...
it's going to be 55 wins.
Yeah, exactly. That's so fair. just to clarify for everybody, you know what I mean?
I would not be shocked if they missed the playoffs. I'll put that out there.
Yeah, definitely not.
And I think that that's not really a talking point that people have had.
That's kind of why I asked, by the way. Yeah. It's like, if they miss the playoffs, you got to wonder what Russ is thinking. And then, you, like, Presti has pulled the trigger in the past and would have with Russ had he not signed the extension.
I mean, a team like Minnesota is the team that's just praying for something to go wrong in Oklahoma City, because that's the team now that could be in line and sneak that 8 seed.
Yeah. And then, or I thought you were going to say they could then trade for Russ. Which
Well, now
the
you're
heir
thinking,
to Prince.
Now you're thinking really big.
That'd
but
be great.
No.
All right. Next.
I just want to see Russ and Paul George in Miami.
I'm going to skip the next two teams. Respectfully, we have nothing to say about the Spurs. They're going to win high 50s, maybe 60 games. That's fine. Disrespectfully, I am like done with the Clippers. Like, they're going to be good. I love Chris Paul. I'm sick of having the exact same Clippers conversation. Like, is this the year that they break through, or is it the end of Lob City? We've been there for 36 months.
Yeah, the thing that I feel the worst about the Clippers is that their path has finally opened for them. These other teams have kind of come back to earth. That holy grail of the Western Conference Finals is just out there, just like with their name on it, like appearing like a mirage in the desert in front of them. And then like waiting right behind that mirage is Godzilla, aka the Golden State Warriors, just ready to stomp on them and embarrass them and try to double the score on them every single game during the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah.
And that is really hard mentally if you're the Clippers. I mean, number one, like, you're trying to get back up, work Blake in. You know, I'm sure they're feeling a lot of the same feelings that you are about, you know, we've been here before. Why is it going to work this time? And so forth. And then to realize that Golden State's just looming for you. And like, you always had in the back of your head, like, we don't have a small forward. Like, thank God the Warriors have Harrison Barnes. Like, this could actually work. Like, you could talk yourself into it if you were the Clippers the last couple of years. And this year it's like, we don't have a small forward. Oh,
Yeah.
It's Kevin Durant, you know? It's like, yeah, that's not going to work out
this
for them.
This is a great segue because my big question, like, I don't think we need to talk about the mechanics of how the Warriors are going to play, but I want to know, like, how many titles are out there at this point? Over under 2.5.
I think, and
I don't know. Should we include the one they already won?
I would say 2.5 more is a fair line.
Yeah.
Because you look at Miami, they got 2, and it could have been 4, you know, depending on the breaks. I mean, they got run off the court by the Spurs. That was a great Spurs team. If you just have an average opponent in the finals, there's a good chance they win that series. And then LeBron completely fell to pieces, and he's probably the first person to admit that against the Mavericks, right?
Right.
So 4 was in play for those guys.
For sure.
And Wade was older than these guys are. You look at Kevin Durant, 27, 28. I mean, he's going to be a top 3 player for the next 5 years. So you have to consider them title contenders for those whole 5 years.
Klay is also...
They're all lined up. You know, Steph, Klay, Draymond, age-wise, are all very similar. You're going to have to do some work to the bench. You're going to have to find a center. You're going to have to rotate the center, sort of like the Heat did with Chris Anderson and moves like that.
I wonder, like, because they may also just have a churn of... You know what's one big difference between the Warriors and those Heat teams is like Pat Riley was just in like checked out Mafia Don mode and was like selling first round picks and just didn't give a shit. The Warriors have...
They play every angle.
Yeah. They have Patrick McCaw.
Light years.
Damian Jones. And I mean, that's going to be an issue down the line. Like that's going to continue to extend their dominance and their core. I think you pointed out earlier today, the big thing for them, like if Draymond were to get hurt, and obviously like he's been phenomenal thus far, but if he doesn't hold up with like extended minutes down low, that's a big issue.
Their big vulnerability, no question, is interior defense if Draymond's not on the court. I mean, they're going to be at their best when he's playing center and KD's playing 4. That is a filthy 4-5 combo.
Would you pick this team to win the title if it were KD, Steph, Klay, and Zaza?
Like, who's the 5th?
Iguodala. Like, if you just take Draymond out of the equation.
It gets a lot closer. I mean, because Draymond was so, so good last year. I mean, they're probably still the title favorites. Would they be able to hold up over a 7-game series against Cleveland? Defensively, I would have some questions there. I mean, they really need Draymond against guys like Tristan or even against LeBron as a backup defender. And look how much they missed Bogut when Bogut was injured. I mean, Kyrie and LeBron were just basically taking off for the rim, right? So I think that is their weakness. They're going to try to plug that hole with bodies. And they got like 5 bigs they're going to be throwing in there and they're going to be able to get by most nights. But I think in playoff matchups, you know, not having Draymond.
Well, and what worries me is we talk about like big picture future. Like, I think if you give Bob Myers and Steve Kerr another couple years to figure out solutions to that problem, then they'll figure it out.
You mean like recruiting DeAndre Jordan?
No. There's going to be no Boogie or DeAndre.
DeAndre Jordan's best friends with Kevin Durant. You know that, right?
I do know that. Yeah.
Just saying.
I also know that KD is a free agent in 2 years. And I don't know if you've heard, but he's from Washington, D.C. So.
Oh, I see. We're going to do that again. No, to answer your question, though, the over-under, I think that is the fair place to put it 2.5. I mean, if they're not able to get at least a couple of titles from this, given the ridiculous accumulation.
But you gotta pick. Are we going 3?
Well, I'm just saying if even 2 would be a little disappointing.
Yeah.
Because they should get this one.
Yep.
And then you're gonna basically have to force another set of guys to team up to take them down. That's the only way you're gonna do it if you have all these guys in their prime, right? So that's gonna take a few years to play out. I think
Why, by the way, on the first East podcast, I asked about LeBron because like,
there might not be another one out there.
There might not be a window.
Yeah. Well, this is the window. I think this year is, you know.
This is it.
Jump them just like the Mavericks jump the Heat, right?
Yeah.
If they don't do it this year, man, there's going to be a lot of finger pointing. Can you imagine the finger pointing? Because there wasn't any, like somehow Draymond just escaped internal blame. He punches LeBron in the crotch, gets himself suspended, and completely blows a 3-1 lead. That was the turning point. Everyone agrees. And yet nobody within the organization blamed him.
Yeah.
If they lose another finals with this collection of talent, first of all, you know who's going to go nuts? Joe Lacob. He bit his tongue this time around. That guy is going to freaking lose his mind. What more do I have to do?
Joe Lacob is also one of the ones who, he's part of what got me thinking, long term.
Yeah.
Because he mentioned, if you thought last year was crazy, the last few years were crazy, you haven't even seen anything yet.
But once they get their new arena, I mean.
I hate Joe Lacob, but I can't argue with him.
He's backed it up. I mean, he did everything he could do.
All right, so let's say three titles for the Warriors.
I'll take the over.
Okay, I'll take the same, and I want to add that the Wolves will beat them. Huh. In 2020, the Wolves will come through.
This is crazy. I'm writing down all these bets that we're making, and I'm running out of paper because I can't wait.
Yeah. Don't forget, you're going to owe me $1,200 in April. Thank you guys for listening, and we appreciate any reviews. The reviews help boost our profile on iTunes, apparently.
We also need to make picks, though, real quick. Western Conference Finals.
Clippers, Warriors.
I'm going to go Warriors over Spurs in the matchup that we finally get after years of wanting it with Duncan, and it's going to be a complete,
I don't know, man. I think it could be fun.
Five games.
The Spurs can slow things down against the Warriors, make it interesting. But anyways, thank you so much for listening. And we will be back with predictions and
subscribe on iTunes.
Yes.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.